weekend off, and we missed ships yesterday, but something, I'm tired as crap too, but something told me that you probably had a lot to get off your chest today. It is, let's see, Tuesday the 28th where you're at, so this is the second day of court this week.
Yep.
And obviously, I guess the first thing that's probably going to be on your mind is, and I have to admit that I'm probably guilty of it too, is when there's a story like this, we tend to dehumanize the aspects of it. But I believe it was Ammon Bundy's wife that put out a video on Facebook in the past few days. You familiar with that video?
No, I didn't see the video.
Yeah, she put out, I think it was a Facebook Live thing.
I don't really comment on Facebook stuff. I don't really want to talk about what's happening in court, honestly.
Yeah. She was basically saying the Ammons had been transported there to Oregon.
Yeah, he got transported, I think, Saturday when he got here. So,
mm-hmm. So you want to give us a rundown of what happened Monday and today?
Well, there's a lot of drama happened, but the first thing I want to cover, you know, the government wasn't, I guess, done with their guns, I think, from the last time we talked, or maybe I didn't mention it, but they they have all these guns that, like, a whole bunch of people left behind, and they're parading them through, like, evidence. But the FBI guys, who I guess, you know, are obviously accustomed to handling guns, have these guns that have the plastic loops in them, so that they won't really work. But a lot of people, you know, I think especially in Oregon, aren't used to seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
And so these guys just wave them around like they're nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the barrel of these guns are pointing at the judge, pointing at, I mean, I was looking down the barrel of a rifle at least a gun,
uh-huh.
Either a rifle or a handgun, four or five times, flagging the jurors. I mean, just flagging everybody in the whole place,
right,
with these guns. And, you know, I'm just going, I can't believe they, you know, it was compelling to me, but nobody was really saying anything. And, and so it sort of went by. Well, the next day, the next FBI guy, and I don't know if we talked about it, stop me. But the next FBI guy comes on, and he's like this secret covert insertion team guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how him and 22 others secretly inserted themselves onto the refuge from the east, even though we know they had like an agreement with the neighbor from the west. And then they asked, I don't even know how to talk about. First he comes on and he phonetically, they ask him to spell his name, and he's got a long name, and I have it written down, but I don't have it in front of me.
Is it pronounceable?
It's pronounceable, yeah. It's like, you know, Edward Murray something, Aaron Edward Murray, that's not it, you know, I'm murdering it, but that's what it is. But, and they always tell you, say your name and spell it. And he begins to spell his name with the phonetic alphabet. You know, like, Alpha, Bravo, Zulu, right? He starts,
yeah,
spelling his name out.
Jesus, okay.
And he gets to his last name and mucks it up and has to back up and go again. Number one, it's a little weird.
A little bit.
You spell your name with the phonetic alphabet. I mean, maybe not, but it, you know, I've never seen it happen in court. And then because it sort of, and then to mess it up and back up was even funnier. And then they ask him. They put up this map, dude, and the only marking on it's a map. It's a topographical sort of map, and the only marking on the map, it says in big bold letters, Malheur National Wildlife Refuge Headquarters, with like a line and a little round ball at the end of the line marking on the map where the headquarters are. And they ask this guy to mark on the map with his, you know, circle on the map where the headquarters are. He couldn't find it.
So he
could not find it on the map.
So he's a career company man.
Circle, okay, you searched the, or did something.
Show me on the map where the militia hurt you.
He says, circle on the map where the Narrows are, right? Because he did something and something at the Narrows, and he circles like whatever it was, 2 or 3 miles away. He circles where they're, basically their operation was, not where the Narrows was, but where, you know, 2-3 miles away.
Yeah.
He didn't identify anything on the map correctly. I don't think he identified east and west correctly. Phonetically spells his name, messes it up, has to start over. Gets scolded by the judge because he's the last guy in line who is handling the firearms. So, unfortunately, he fell into this. But the first firearm they hand him, he flags like a bunch of folks and ends up having the barrel pointed at the judge. And she's like,
I picture people in the courtroom like ducking.
You know, I wasn't looking around. You know, I'm sort of comfortable, and I know how you know, I can see the bands, and I know how safe they've made them. So I guess, but even still, it's chilling looking down the barrel of a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So he ends up getting this thing pointed at the judge, and she loses it. Can you hold those? And, you know, the jurors yesterday said something to the effect of, I can't remember her exact chastising of this guy. Mm-hmm. So he instantly gets the thing up, and she tells him that the jury's uncomfortable with how he's handling weapons. And the first thing he does is turn to address the jury. Let me assure you that these firearms, and she goes, no, I didn't ask you to talk to the jury. I asked to just totally reams this guy after he's done a complete fail. I am talking about the biggest failure I've ever seen, and he seems like a decent fellow. I don't know. He had an off day. Let's just put it that way.
Wasn't his swan song.
The thing of it is, I don't know a lot about the military because I wasn't in, but I know they do weird things. And I'm thinking, if you come and spell your name phonetically in court, you've lost a bet with your crew or something, and they've dared you now to spell it phonetically. And if you screw it up on the record and it gets back to those guys, they are going to haze you for the rest of your life for having done that and getting chastised. But that, I don't want to be that guy. I think that must happen in the FBI. I don't know. But so that was, and there's a cartoon, dude. I found a cartoonist that's doing like cartoons on this. And he's got a cartoon of it that I posted on my Facebook. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I think I said the here, hold this gun and recall MWR headquarters. Yeah. I was looking at that before we got on.
And he took the circle in the wrong spot. Oh, my goodness. I saw that and just died laughing.
Who did that drawing? Do you know?
I don't know. It's somebody pointed it out to me on Facebook there. So I think you can click on that page, and that's the guy. And I don't know him, but somebody put me onto him. So I'll keep looking there because – dude, I died laughing seeing that comic this morning. Oh, my word, it was hilarious. So that's the, you know, if there's comedy in this, that's the comedy portion of it. You know, if it wasn't so serious, because I don't know, you know, people don't want to look down the barrel of a gun. And people already don't trust the FBI. And so, you know, I don't know how traumatic – it was obviously traumatic enough that one of the jurors mentioned it to the judge, and the judge got her own whiff of it there in the room.
Well, you're supposed to treat every gun like it's loaded, man.
Yeah, and the thing of it is everybody knows that. How come the FBI doesn't?
So this was clearly a prosecution's witness?
No. Wonder, I mean, you know, there's stray bullets at the FBI shooting where they pick up the shell casings. I mean, what is it, just an oops? And they, you know,
yeah.
I don't know. it's too. The thing of it is, Daniel, and I feel bad. I want to apologize to the listeners. You have to be able to laugh. This stuff is so serious. So somebody even laughing right now, dude, I don't feel good about it because a man is dead and it's a serious situation. But at some point, you got to live and laugh. So there's the laughing portion of it. Now the serious portion of it. So they've called the prosecution's second to last witness before they called Ronnie Walker, the one under the special agent in charge, for the third time, right? This guy sat in all of the first trial. He sat in all, sat through the whole first trial. And so every time they need to clean up their case, they bring in this agent that's been sitting in through all the testimony to clean it up for him. But they called Blaine Cooper. And Blaine Cooper's, pled guilty earlier on in the first trial, pled guilty in the second trial. And, in my opinion, made a bad deal. He's had all kinds of drama involved with him. He's got a rough. He's just, he's had a rough upbringing. And so anyways, he's got a wife and two kids at home, and he suffers from some mental disorders. Mm-hmm. I think like bipolar, and diagnosed bipolar and PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And so they call him to the stand, and he is like a completely different dude. I mean, just a completely different guy.
Different from when you guys were at the refuge?
Well, just different than I've ever known. I mean, listen, he's never been my most favorite person in the world, but he has 68,000 followers on Facebook. So, mm-hmm. He sort of tries to get the word out. It's usually that sort of inflammatory thing that you and I don't like, right? So I never really dug that, but he was at least going to places and, he was trying to bring his own light to wherever he could bring it. And he ended up bringing it to a lot of the similar or same places that I was trying to bring mine. Mm-hmm. So I respected that. He's the only person, I finally had to put monitors on my Facebook to review things that you're tagged in, because he posted on my Facebook more than I did with as many things as he tagged me in. It would drive insane. Right. And I'd never done that, but because of what he was doing, I did, because it was a lot of times just inflammatory garbage and whatnot. But, if I'm trying to monitor the net, I monitor him a lot of other things just to try to, so I can always, what I'm saying, you can't scoop nothing if you're not following other people who are trying to scoop stuff.
Right.
But, so he gets called, and he testifies to a meeting, and that there's 100% agreement to absolutely take over the refuge and impede the employees. And I'm my mouth is dropping to the floor. I'm like, what is he talking about? Right. Mm-hmm. And you and I both know that when the government puts the screws to people, especially people that suffer from any sort of mental trauma or mental disability of some kind, which he certainly qualifies for, they come out different. Mm. You know what I mean? And so he just sort of sounded like he's basically singing the government's tune. He believes that based on that testimony, he's going to get a lighter sentence. Just a lot of different, just weird stuff.
Mm.
And when he first was coming to testify, I was sort of a little upset, right? Like, why would he be testifying for the prosecution? But after he was done, it was hard, despite what I believe is garbage.
Mm-hmm.
That testimony. So then So that stirred up the whole world because he's testifying to something, and then everybody jumps on the hate him train, and that goes on. And then, you know, Ammon Bundy then takes the stand. He's also in chains and sort of testifies that, you know, he remembers sort of what Blaine was talking about, but just doesn't remember the same way as Blaine. And now it's like this big divide and chaos. And I sort of look at it. It's hard, right? Because it's, again, the tale of two cities. And you've got the government's put the screws to two people. Mm-hmm. One of them suffers from mental trauma, mental disabilities. And one is pretty grounded home life, grounded in his faith, grounded in who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pull from that these two diametrically opposing testimonies, and I think it speaks volumes to the system, right? System's there to break down the weak, and only the strong might be able to endure if they can continue to endure. It sort of was my takeaway from all that.
Mm.
But it's got the whole, you know, everything up in a tizzy and everybody calling everybody else a liar, you know, classic divide and conquer. And so I sort of look at it like if you and I agreed that we were going to flip a coin,
mm-hmm.
right? You and me, we're going to flip a coin, right? And one of us is going to call it. And I flip the coin and I catch it and flip it onto my hand. And then you shout at me because you thought that the coin was going to hit the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we both call each other liars.
Right.
We didn't agree how the coin flip was actually, you know what I mean? It's a weird thing.
Did it seem like maybe to the jury that Ammon Bundy's testimony would corroborate Blaine's?
Well, you know, there's things that corroborate. You know, if you're going to tell a lie, make sure that it's covered in 90% truth.
Yeah, keep it parallel to the truth. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's that. So I don't really know. I mean, I don't know what the, you know, it was all compelling to me to hear it for the first time. So that's where we are. The government's since rested. They called back Special Agent Ronnie Walker,
mm-hmm.
and I took notes. I can't even. It's been a whirlwind. You know, I'm getting other people that are, you know, trying to get witnesses, and some witnesses haven't been coming. And look, Ammon was our first witness, so there was that.
And that was today?
That was today, yeah.
I believe it's, I'm pretty sure it's Ammon's wife. I don't want to mess it up. But yeah, the video that she put up, she was very upset in it, and it broke my heart. Said that, you know, the transport for them was extremely rough. And she did mention your name. She said a few people that had been transported, but that Pete Santilli wasn't transported, and I guess threw it out there to you as to if you knew why or, you know, who else would come. But, man, she looked like she was in a bad place. She said that she had gotten a call from Ammon earlier when he first got there, and that what she indicated was he was in the worst spirit she'd ever heard, you know, which is bad to hear, and asked everybody to pray for him. I didn't know if you'd caught wind of that or not, but, you know, I'm pretty sure riding in the back of a paddy wagon across state lines is not a good thing on your spirit, you know. And
It's been weird for me, and I think it just, I mean, it really hit me today in court, maybe for the first time. You know, I've been doing this for the better part of a year, and sort of looked at it like this. You know, I look at these guys, you know, I was in jail with these guys. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of like an equal footing kind of thing. But here I've been out for a while I'm still dealing with federal court and having to travel all the time to make it to the meetings and having to be in court, not being able to go back and see my family in Georgia and all of that. It has been, it's weighed on me some. It's weighed on me a lot. I mean, I'm not going to lie. But today, you know, watching Ammon walk out for, I think, the third time in chains, he's done with his testimony, so you know he's going back to Nevada, and he walks past me the third time in chains, dude, and it sort of just broke me down, because for the first time, I saw Ammon Bundy as the same as I saw Dwight Hammond. Right. So Dwight Hammond is what inspired me to lose my job and go to Oregon and shine a light and do everything I could do to expose what was happening to the Hammonds. And you know, everybody was making that stand for that direction. And, you know, I've tried not to lose focus on that. You know, I sometimes just post Dwight Hammond, Dwight Hammond, Dwight Hammond. But today, you know, for me, I broke down because I'm like, he's Dwight Hammond. He's been in jail over a year for having never been convicted of anything. He's got a 2-year-old son he hasn't seen in a year and, well, since January sometime. Mm-hmm. So a year and a month. You know, Dwight Hammond's still in jail. And it got real heavy, man. It got real heavy today. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still in trial or whatever. I feel like we're winning. You know, I've always thought we were winning the silly felony case, but I got the judge ruling on some weird misdemeanor, so there's that. But, you know, they're facing, like, I think Ryan Payne's facing a mandatory minimum of 57 years if he gets convictions on his charges.
Who is this?
I've heard other Ryan Payne.
Okay.
I've heard other estimates of the charges total have a range of like 87 years, and I've even heard estimates of 116 years. Blaine Cooper testified that he believes he's going to get over 100 years and possibly could get the death sentence with the terrorism enhancement from the 1996 counterterrorism clause.
Mm-hmm.
That's heavy, heavy stuff.
Right.
And so you think about, you know, Blaine Cooper who, for better or worse, tried to play a Moxie G.I. Joe on Facebook, right? You play a part. I don't even know how to explain it, right? Because I'm not trying to get down on him, but he's basically playing a part.
Mm-hmm.
And it's inflammatory on purpose. The stuff you and I talk about that we don't necessarily like.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's got the screws put to him. I mean, just put to him. For standing up for the Constitution or whatever. So he just comes in and he sings the government song, tries to ride right down the government narrative in hopes of getting a better deal. He says he wasn't promised anything, and, you know, I'm not sure he's smart enough to even leverage. You know, but he's a prior convicted felon, has pictures of him with firearms, which, you know, you can argue the Second Amendment. There's just a lot of constitutional stuff at play that has put all this yuck,
right,
on so many people. And we can go past, you know, Ammon Bundy, Dwight Hammond, Blaine Cooper, and that. There's Joe Robertson, you know, had pawns on his own property that's now in jail. You know, I always talk about, again, you know, Tamir Rice and James Boyd were milestones for me. You know, and that wasn't FBI stuff. And you still got the shooting of Lavoie Finicum that's been investigated now. The same FBI, right? The same FBI that decided to execute a felony traffic stop into a dead man's roadblock and used lethal force in 41 days has been investigating themselves for a year without a peep. And it's just too much, man. I start looking at it like, how far can you push people? You know, I had some banter with one of the marshals going into court today, and you know, you end up getting some of the marshals, dude, are just respectful and nice and polite and do their job as efficiently as they can with manners and respect.
Right.
And some of them just have a marshal's badge on their shoulder and they wear it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said something to me and I said something back, and he says, "You shouldn't poke the bear." And I'm like, "You're exactly right. And I'm the bear." Right. What he doesn't understand is he doesn't understand freedom. Right. Fundamentally, our country doesn't understand freedom anymore.
Now, was he indicating that, like just between you and him, that relationship, or was he talking about the bigger thing,
the whole trial?
No, he's talking about, like, just in general, like, you know, you should know better, you don't poke the bear. Okay. Meaning, I'm just a little peasant, and I've poked the giant federal government, and boy, it's just going to let me have it.
Okay.
Well, the federal government's not supposed to be a bear. It's actually supposed to be like a caterpillar. That doesn't bother us because it's so small, and we don't bother it because bears don't mess with caterpillars. But I think what he misses, and what I'm trying to make is a point.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom is the bear. A bear is a free thing. And if you corner it and poke at it and prod at it and push it and make laws and rules and confine it, and eventually that bear is going to just bust through the bars and maul you to death. Right? And we're talking about an analogy here because we don't want to talk about terrorism.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Make sure we clarify. This is a story.
But how, you know, see what I'm saying? How much does that marshal or any government at all think that they continue to poke the free spirit of the American people? Right? And some of them, you know, say they gladly accept their bars, and I guess we shoot the rest of them. I don't know. But how much can you continue? How much abuse can you take?
Right. Yeah. The perspective on the nature of the relationship between we the people and they has been severely lopsided for a long time. Yeah, it makes you weary. It makes you weary.
Yeah, I mean, I see two, you know, decent guys, and you know, Blaine has had his issues. I'm not going to doubt that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of me feels guilty because I wanted him to talk about certain. I would share things with him, hoping he would share it because I knew it would get publicity because of the fan base he has.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, was I just using Blaine? You know, sometimes I like dealing with them sometimes, but sometimes I just didn't. And that, I think that's just free association.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, was he playing a role? And then he got the screws put to him. And once the screws are put to him and you see him come in, this just broken, his free spirit is gone.
Right.
You can see it on his face. You can see it, the free, the free thing that was inside of him, whatever freedom there was that you could see in him, is gone.
He gave it away.
It's nearly gone in Ammon. Watching Ammon walk, even testifying, whatever, you can see the free, you can see freedom just draining out of these people. You know, and they're not the only people in the world. You know what I mean? I've been pointing at injustice for a while now. But now it's people I know, right? And some people would say, like, all right, finally, Whitey's getting his. I don't buy into race things, and I've seen it. I know there's a disparity, so that just doesn't work on me, right? All it is now it's somebody that I know, right? It's tangible. It's people I know, and I can reach out and touch and see and feel and.
This is what you've been fighting against. Was it coming home to roost, or coming on your own doorstep? And here it is.
Yeah, I mean, we had, you know, back when we were doing there, you had Martin Petrosky that was dealing. You heard about Martin Petrosky, right?
He went to jail, right?
Yeah, dude, you have not heard the latest. So yeah, Martin Petrosky stood up for his rights to be who he is without, you know, no Nazi papers. They smash in his window, rip him out, take him to court. He tries to stand on his rights. The judge sort of railroads him. He's worked the paperwork issue for a long time, and I think he ends up getting like a year in jail and sort of 9 months out. But the fight sort of took it out of him. He ended up having a stroke a year later. And because of the stroke, he didn't have full use of his I think something about his arms. And so he had trouble keeping work. You know, I think he had post-traumatic stress disorder. That's just my conjecture, right? I didn't hear that. I just heard that he had a stroke and he was struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and he's got a 2-year-old daughter, and he ended up committing suicide.
My God.
Just here, what, February 20th? Just this last, I think it was February 20th, he had a memorial service in Florida.
No, I didn't know that. That's too bad to hear. I had a few communications with him regarding driver's licenses and whatnot. No, I was disappointed to hear that the judge railroaded him because his legal stuff was sound.
And we had that deal with, you know, with our other, with Turner, mm-hmm. and his, what, cousin? You know, they get called on a potential suicide and end up shooting them. I mean, just
yeah. That's too bad to hear.
And now everything's illegal, including breathing, unless you have, you know, the new Affordable Care Act program. It's illegal to breathe, and we're making more laws this cycle, I'm sure. It's just. And I see protests of some degree or other, like, all over. Everybody's protesting something somewhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not a defeatist, right? I like to wake up in the morning and put a smile on my face, so I don't want to be this big, huge downer because life goes on and
but it's going to get smile. It's going to get how, real sometimes.
It's going... It's got nowhere else to go. I thought about it today, man. I just thought about it today since I've been out of court. Isn't it telling that the government charged the Malheur protesters with a Civil War statute? A statute from the Civil War. Uh-huh. A Civil War relic, if you will. Is that a foretelling thing? When the government goes, aha, we see what you're doing.
Yeah, but in literature,
well,
we
let
call
us
that foreshadowing.
Show you. Yeah, is that a foreshadowing? Let us show you what we think of your little protest.
Yeah,
we think you guys, patriot guys, sort of militia things, PPN, whatever you call it. You know, that movement, yeah, we think it's Civil War-ish. So right. We're going to charge you with this Civil War statute, just so you know what we're thinking.
Right.
And, you know, that's conjecture or whatever. But I just thought about it today. I'm like, they charge us with a Civil War relic. Are they trying to tell us that they believe this is a Civil War? Or are they just going, you guys are so dumb, this is a Civil War, and we know it, but you don't. Maybe this will show you.
Maybe a little bit of both.
Is the government, we've talked about Posse Comitatus and how it's been breached. Are we already in a Civil War? We're just sort of in denial?
I don't know. I mean, people think that, you know, martial law is with the troops on the street, but we've been under martial law for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, you know? I've heard that, and I understand it. Yeah. Explain that theory. You do it better than I do.
That we've been under martial law for a long time?
Yeah.
I mean, even going back to, the National Defense Authorization Act? That is, I mean, that right there tells you we're under martial law. But if you go even further, I mean, since the Patriot Act, when you can define anybody and everybody as a terrorist, but with a little bit of, like you said the other day, a shell game of words, when anybody can be a terrorist, you know.
Well, I've heard some people talk about it like we've never come out of martial law from the Civil War. They declared martial law and they never undeclared it.
That, yeah, I've heard that too, you know. It was probably like a tool in their toolbox that they just kind of put to the side for a long time, but it's there. I mean, but you know, you don't have to be under martial law with troops on the ground if you can do it in the minds of the people, the minds and the hearts of the people.
I want to figure out how we've been fighting a war on drugs since like the 70s, right? And I only knew about it really big in the 80s because Reagan was that whole war on drugs. But I think Nixon started it. How in the world have you been waging a war without breaching Posse Comitatus?
Yeah. Like Bill Hicks also said, you know, whenever Reagan or Bush came out and said, we're losing the war on drugs, Bill Hicks pointed out, you're losing a war against drug addicts? You know, how efficient can the government be in this war?
Well, you remember even back when I started, man, and I was talking, I says, you know, you guys you've been having a war on drugs since the 80s, since I can remember, and before that. And I'll tell you what, ain't none, no drugs never died.
No.
Like, you ain't killing no drugs. You killing a whole pile of people and wrecking a lot of lives.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Your war on drugs don't look like a war on drugs to me. It looks like a war on people.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and you know, you go to any of your local jails and whatnot, nine out of ten of them are you know, they're addicted to some type of substance. You know, what if we took all that time and resources and money and whatnot and built rehabilitation facilities and addressed the problem? You know, the only thing I've ever seen in jail with drug addicts are making connections for when they post bail. You know,
yeah.
That's the only thing I've ever seen is rehabilitation in jail.
It's funny to me how I seem to always end up back here, because here I'm talking about ranchers, and I'm talking about James Boyd, who was camping in the desert, and I'm talking about Tamir Rice, who's a 12-year-old kid, and I seem to always end up back to this war on drugs, because I think if we weren't having a war on people via this war on drugs, we wouldn't have the police state that we have now that's doing all these supremely ridiculous things in the name of law.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think people might get frustrated. Like, why does he always end up on the drug war?
Well,
I'm some sort of a drug addict and want to do drugs.
But it justifies
not the fact that I can see this huge glaring problem.
Well, and right? it justifies and it purports the militarization of the police, like with the damn Bearcat. I mean, whenever you were at City Hall and I was following behind filming, the thing that kept popping up every time you would bring it up or show a video of that stupid porno ad for a tank is really what it was, well, what if we have to go hit a meth house? Well,
yeah.
Maybe if you didn't, if these people didn't feel that they needed to behave like cockroaches because of their addiction and there was some place to go for help,
You wouldn't have the escalation.
Or if they could grow a plant in their yard to get a fix so that they didn't need meth.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'm not a drug user, right? If you can grow weed at your house, would you be less likely to use other substances?
Right.
I don't know the answer to that. It's always sort of batted around in my head. Like, maybe if you can grow it in your yard, you don't have to pay for it no more. I don't know. I'm not advocating drug use because I think it's terrible. But I've been living a long time. I know a lot of people smoke weed. And I know the statistics that, you know, zero people have died from a weed overdose.
Right.
You know, a grand total of zero. That big evil plant
in human history
that you kick doors in and kill people for has never killed anybody. You're waging war on a plant. Actually, you're waging war on innocent people because of a plant.
Right.
But Jeff Sessions, man, it's a rule of law, and they're going to start, I hear they're going to start enforcing it. So,
were you ever, did you ever follow, you know, what's his face, the guy who caught Capone? His name escapes me. I know he greatly exaggerated his book. I think they turned it into The Untouchables or whatever. Elliot Ness. Spent all this time and passion trying to put, you know, Al Capone in jail and all these bootleggers in jail. And when Al Capone was finally convicted, the press asked Elliot Ness, they said, "So when Prohibition is lifted, what are you going to do?" And Elliot Ness said, "I'm going to have a drink." Which is, to me, was the biggest retarded thing you could say as somebody who is so, you know, it's because somebody wrote it on a piece of paper, I'm going to do all this shit, but as soon as that piece of paper and that ink is gone, and I'm just going to do what I put these guys in bars for doing. It's like, what? The thinking of a company man.
There was a lady trying to get into the court today, and she had a lot of stuff. And she's essentially apologizing to the marshal because she feels like she's taking longer than most of the other people. And he goes, "Oh, don't worry about it. It keeps us employed." Like, oh my gosh. Do you know how hideous that sounds?
Yeah.
And it's sort of what, I mean, it's sort of that statement right there is nearly similar to what we've talked about, like in, I'm beginning to hear, and this is, I'm sure, conjecture from somewhere, but I think it's actually happened too, that man smoke jumpers who get paid to put out wildfires have been caught working with other people to actually set wildfires so that they can go get the big overtime pay that they get for putting them out.
I believe it. I 100% right? Believe it.
Oh, don't worry about lighting the woods on fire. It keeps us employed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
it's so when I hear the marshal saying that, I'm like, yeah, you're overly oppressive tyranny that I don't really think keeps too many people that much safer. Does keep you employed. That it does. I don't think we should do that, just like I don't think we should purposely set fires in the woods so guys can get big overtime to go put them out or whatever other... You know, I don't know, man.
It's been a long day, hasn't it?
I've been doing this too long, right? I need to go back. I need to go get into the deer woods.
Yeah, you need to get a long way
from deer season. So,
well, we're coming up on the end of the hour. Go ahead.
I need to get out in the woods. I need to get out into some nature. I've been in Portland way too long. No, this whole thing is concrete, and you got to ride the train with zombies, dude. Riding the train, right? I don't have a phone that works without Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. I'm the only dude in there that's not looking at my phone. It's like Zombieland. It is like Zombieland.
Yep.
Some lady got on the train the other day, and she was the only other person on her phone. She was standing. I was like, "Would you like to sit down?" And she's like, "Yes." And she sits down and says, "It's just the two of us, not on phones then, right?"
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Yeah, how are you?" You know, we actually had a conversation, right, with a stranger.
Oh, my God. In public?
Stranger danger.
Yeah.
So I don't know, dude.
It's funny that topic's been coming up in a lot of the different conversations I've been having around, and it's like, man, Jesus, dude. I got caught into the rat wheel of being able to have everyone has 24-hour-a-day access to me, mm-hmm. and expects it, and vice versa. And then, you know, when I finally said, you know what, I don't really leave the house much, so I don't need a cell phone anymore, mm-hmm. and just got rid of that shit, I have never felt so free in my life. And, you know, the world continues to operate, and I'm not 100% connected to it all the time. And you actually see the real world when you ain't got your nose shoved in a phone. It's liberating. Right. It's very, very liberating, you know. So, I don't know, man.
Yeah, how do we get more of that? I don't know. And I think some of that exists. You know, I think I would have plenty of it if I wasn't involved in federal crap for a year.
Yeah.
And there's some of it here anyway, but, you know, yeah, I don't know.
It's good not to get stuck into it.
It is weird to be on the train in Portland. Dude, it was so packed. It was packed. There was 100 people crammed into this train. Not a peep. not a sound. You're in the woods of zombies. And I found myself, I was feeling bad because I thought I was going to begin to laugh for mm-hmm. no reason. And then I might get a straitjacket. But I started smiling. You know what I almost did? I almost started just singing. But I thought they might throw me off the train. I was trying to come up with a tune I could just belt out. Like, dum da dum da dum da dum da da. That's the same horse ride a cowboy.
You got to do that video, Killed the Radio Star or something. That'd be great.
Which reminds me now, you know, some sudden outburst on the train. Today, I think twice something happened in court that was funny. And the jury laughed, the gallery laughed. Like, you know what I mean? When something's funny, people laugh. It's sort of a spontaneous thing. Mm-hmm. Well, it happened a second time when this old codger, Chris Bryles, used to be the fire chief, committee of safety member, they asked him, you know, sort of about like what he felt when Ammon went into the refuge, his initial feelings. And he says, because he came out to the refuge, what do you want to do when you go out to the refuge? He says, I was going to chew his butt. And everybody started laughing. Uh-huh. And the judge like had a conniption fit. The next person that laughs in this courtroom will not be in the court any longer. I'm like, whoa. And I swear to God, dude, I almost just busted out the biggest belly laugh I possibly could.
That would have been great.
I don't want to be in this bitch anyways. Maybe if I belly laugh, you can throw me out and finish this thing without me, and I'll go do some other cool stuff. I don't think that's what she had in mind if I did.
No, she would have thrown you out, but not where you wanted to go.
So what's
up tomorrow?
More court. The defense is going, so there was a list of witnesses. There's the only two I remember them saying on the list is like Patty and Hig Overton.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the defense is looking at resting possibly Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So, today? Today's Tuesday. Wednesday, Thursday, and Monday. Three more days of trial.
Wow, it's going a lot quicker than anticipated.
A lot quicker.
Well, I'll tell you what, it is getting close to the end of the hour, so is there anything else you want to say before we wrap this one up and I process it?
Dwight Hammond, Dwight Hammond, Dwight Hammond.
There you go. And, of course, now everybody doesn't have to run around with their chicken, like a chicken with their head cut off to get a hold of you. If they go to downloadedcontent.com/JPP, there's a contact page, and you can just put your message in there and your email address, and it'll go straight to the email that Jason and his family can get to, and obviously go to GoFundMe.com/JasonPatrick and help him out in this campaign. And as usual, you know, the of course, the best resource is your prayers, whatever your spiritual proclivity is. Get this past, get him past all this so he can get into a deer stand, right?
Well, you know, I'm definitely going to go see some nature for a minute, and then I'm, you know, I got to get down to Alabama and see what this free baby home thing is all about, because it's been bugging me. And hopefully get to.
Yeah, take a week in between.
That a case?
just take a week and chill out for like a week, okay?
I think my son is coming up this way from Georgia, so hopefully I'll be able to see him. I don't know if he'll be here for when the verdict comes in or not, but I'm hoping so.
That's a good moment.
Yeah.
Because he's actually the very first Zen in the Car TV thing we ever did. He was the camera guy, actually.
Where were we at? Was that down in downtown Atlanta?
No, dude. Your buddy, I forget his name, the one that passed away, it was at a memorial 4th of July thing, and you invited me and my mom out there.
Right.
And we had been talking, we should do some YouTube videos. And you were like, well, let's do it right now. And I think you handed your phone to yours, and that's what started it. So... It was totally unscripted. We did pretty good, though, I think. But, yeah, that was him. So that's a good omen.
Yeah. So, yeah, he'll be up here. And, you know, I got good vibes from this. I don't know what the judge is going to do. You know, if she follows the law, she acquits me. But it's sort of anticlimactic, because I think if you're going to make judicial, even an acquittal outside of constitutional, you know, reflecting on the Constitution is, like, wolf in sheep's clothing, in my opinion. So.
Yeah,
I'll take it, right?
Yeah, you got to take the sweet with the sour, dude.
You can give me an acquittal, and I'll try to get the Constitution back later, I suppose.
Well, that's like you always said, man. You got to pick your hill that you're going to die on, you know. All right, man. I'm going to run. I appreciate it, and I'll try to hit you up a little earlier than today, tomorrow.
All right, thanks for your help.
All right, man. Get some sleep.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Podcast download dot com.